Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
When you tell your brain that you are going to look out for something, like I'm going to have a lousy day, for example, your brain begins to filter to show you things in the environment to reinforce what you've told it to be looking out for.
Dr. Lee Warren on Focus on the Family Minute, sharing how we can change the way we think.
This is why Scripture is always telling us to rejoice in all of our circumstances, to keep a positive attitude, to look for things to be thankful for. Because if you're looking for things to not be thankful for, you're going to find a lot of them, because your brain will literally try to show you the environment that you're looking for. And so it's not magic. It's the way God made our minds to help us see the world that He's put out there. There's always possibility around us, and there's always trouble. He says look for the positive, because that's going to help you make your brain function as best it can.
Hear more from Dr. Warren today at FamilyMinute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
The Rest of the Story. It was the night before New Year's Eve at the Wilbur Theater in Boston, and it seemed more like a war than a cultural event. The production schedule for that evening was a new play by an unknown dramatist named Thomas Lanier. The work was entitled Battle of Angels, but the only battling which very nearly broke out was in the audience. The play was materially provocative to begin with. It was about a handsome young drifter who settles in a small town and seduces half of the female population. And then after a couple of hours of sex and blasphemy, a surge of savage violence. The central character, who has impregnated the wife of his employer, is incinerated. Right there on stage, incinerated with a blowtorch wielded by the jealous husband. But that night, something unanticipated, yet doubtless merciful, happened. In rehearsal, there had not been enough smoke to suggest the blowtorch murder, so extra smoke pots were brought in for the premiere. As it turned out, far too many smoke pots. And in moments, the Wilbur Theater was engulfed in a thick, black, suffocating fog. The well-dressed and highly proper Bostonian theater-goers, on the verge of their own violent protest of this prurient play, were at once choking and wheezing and scrambling for the exits. Well, miraculously, nobody was asphyxiated that night. But Thomas Lanier, the provocative playwright, was very nearly crucified. And needless to say, his play, Battle of Angels, closed hurriedly. It was replaced by a more acceptable piece of stagecraft. The play's producers did something then unprecedented, and I don't know that it's ever happened since. The producers, fearing reprisals, promptly dispatched apologetic letters to subscribers. Can you imagine the producers of the play writing personal letters to everybody in the audience apologizing? Quote, "The play was more of a disappointment to us than to you," they wrote. Well, you'd think that was that. But this is the rest of the story. Tom Lanier somehow kept writing plays. And often he would write those plays on scraps of paper, scrolled into a beat-up old portable typewriter. But eventually, somehow, his work found a most admiring audience. For out of that beat-up old typewriter came such masterpieces as The Glass Menagerie, A Streetcar Named Desire, Sweet Bird of Youth, and a cat on a hot tin roof. Of course, for most of half a century now, the world of theater has revered the work of Thomas Lanier without knowing it, because he renamed himself Tennessee Williams. But now you have seen how his most incredible career almost went up in smoke. Now that you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Slow Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on the right choice, KPRL.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veely, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News. There is no paywall. And we did a very in-depth explanation of how this went down, what is going on. There's some things we don't know yet. We don't know if this is, if people that are not allowed to go right now because of the emergency ordinance, which doesn't end until January 2028, if they have quiet title, can they just say, hey, we have a right to our water, you can't do an emergency ordinance? I don't know that. I think there's going to be some questions coming out as this moves forward. But today I have Greg Graywall. He has been probably one of the people most involved in trying to fight for the property rights of the overliers. And former San Luis Obispo County Supervisor Debbie Arnold is now joining us. She has fought for water rights of the overliers at the same time. Debbie, thank you for coming on the show.
Of course, Karen. Of course. And thank you for having this show today and having Greg on, and also the article, the nice article you wrote in Cal Coast News to help people follow the saga of the water, Paso Robles water, groundwater basin.
I think some people don't know how this all went around. And when you look back to all the attempts they've made to water bank and make money on it, and thank you for that, Debbie. How do you feel now that after 12 years and $21 million, the overliers are getting their quiet title?
I was so excited and so happy. You know, it was amazing to me. And if I can share just like a 30-second story, I was thinking about it today as I was getting ready to call in. What an amazing journey it's been. And how certain things, just little things, will probably disappear in, you know, history. But I can remember at the very beginning, I had just been sworn in as a supervisor in January of 2013, and we were entering that drought cycle. So, of course, during droughts, you know, the groundwater table lowers, I mean, just naturally, right? And I can remember, too, being kind of new to all this. And I'm saying, I mean, our family, we don't irrigate a lot, a very small vineyard, but being in the farming business and so forth for generations, and so much of this was new, that the things that I didn't know coming in as a new supervisor, I didn't know much about groundwater basins, even though now we know that the Paso Robles groundwater basin is one of the largest aquifers in the United States, with an estimated $30 acre feet of total water storage capacity. That's big. And I think that's what made us a target back in the day. But I think so many of us that have lived and worked and even farmed in the North County didn't even realize what a big deal this was going to be. And I remember Cindy Steinbeck coming to the Board of Supervisors with some of her family members, too. One of, you know, many families that came in at that time to try to talk to the supervisors, like, whoa, wait a minute, you know, we don't need more regulations and taxation placed on our farms. And shortly after that, this is one of those things that I think, you know, few people know about this. Greg does, and you do, Karen, and Dan Blackburn does. But, you know, I'm a brand new supervisor, and Peter Adams from Santa Barbara County, he got sworn in at the same time as I did to be a supervisor in Santa Barbara County. his family had been involved down there for a couple decades adjudicating, meaning taking to court the water rights in northern Santa Barbara County, their farming family. And he knew a lot about water law and water and all of it. There were a few people up here that did. And he called me one day, and I'll always remember I was standing at the Castro Bowles Golf Course, and there was an event there, and said, get down here this afternoon. I've got a staff, and I've got a bunch of people that we're going to give you a Water Basin 101 lesson. And I hung up the phone, and I called Cindy Steinbeck. And they were harvesting. If somebody had called me in the middle of harvest, I would have said I can't come. But she washed up, and we went down there together and sat in that office down there, Peter Adams' office, for the rest of the day and learned a lot about the politics of water basins. And that was kind of the start of the journey, I guess we will call it. Greg coming along in the middle of all this was amazing, because he's been such an asset for the people in the basin, the property owners in the basin, all these years. And now, after all these years, and so sadly, $20 million, a lot of it was tax dollars, and a lot of it was poor property owners just paying that out of their pocket. I used to say when I was a supervisor, why are we suing our own citizens when they're just standing up for their constitutional rights? But that lawsuit went on. We didn't have the votes to change that. And so hard fought, really important battle for the history of this.
Hey, you know, yeah. Debbie, thanks for coming on. You know that I think I'm going to write a book. I'm going to sell it to Taylor Sheridan. It'll be the Water Pirates, the Saga of the Water Man instead of the Land Man. These guys, all they had to do was follow the law, and they just didn't understand the priority rights of certain people, because even the states involved with trying really hard to circumvent what's written in the state constitution on the beneficial use of the water, because they wanted to redistribute the water the way they want it redistributed. And for certain players, these agencies that sell water felt that it was more important for them to have the rights to do what they wanted to do and, you know, fooey on you. If you don't want to go along with them, they're going to use OPM, other people's money, to sue you, and you're going to be too small to protect yourself. And, you know, that's what happened. They tried as hard as they could to make it last as long as they could and to make it as expensive as they could to get people to drop out.
And you're right, Greg. There was so much money spent, and a lot of people made a lot of money. A lot of water special water attorneys, just a lot of people, consultants, made money on this, while the taxpayers, you know, had to pay through the nose and really pay a lot of money to.
They were looking at a water authority that's down in Ventura County called Fox Canyon. 3 months ago, Fox Canyon was just finished being adjudicated, and the plaintiffs down there, the landowners, won the same as us. The amazing thing is when you go to the back of this 42-page document, after it gives the rights back to the landowners and tells the appropriators they have to use their supplemental water if there's no surplus, you look at the list of lawyers that are in the back that represented the other agencies, they're all the same attorneys.
Yeah,
all they do is move from one basin to the next, and they lost down there, just like here. I mean, the minute order, just so everybody's clear, there's a thing called the minute order. It was done. The hearing was on 7/30 of this year. So that would be July 30th. So on August 3rd, I got a copy of this. The judge basically writes, Defendant San Miguel filed on July 27th a notice of withdrawal of remaining affirmative defenses to be asserted at the trial currently set to commence August 17th, 2026. Defendant Paso Robles previously filed on June 16th a notice of withdrawal of affirmative defenses to be asserted at trial. No disputed trial issues remain for the Phase 6 trial. Withdrawn affirmative defenses will be determined to be in the favor of the plaintiff and against the defendants. Counsel to provide proposed form of order, plaintiff, us, by August 5th, and any defendant objections to this proposal by August 10th. And that was all done, and the August 17th trial, which was this past Monday, is vacated because there was nothing left to discuss. So now we're just waiting for the judge to sign the order that Richard Zimmer, the attorney of the plaintiffs, sent to the court, which he had done one a few weeks before that for the motion of summary judgment, which we also got to write because we won that too. But that's just portion. It's been a waiting game for a long time. The phase five, which was the what's called self-help, they wanted us to prove we used water on our property 45 years ago, and that trial took 3.5 years because of COVID to get 5 days of trial and 1 day of closing arguments. This last trial, they kicked the can for 2 years.
And then it was the last trial was canceled. They had no standing.
Well, yeah, because in the summary judgment, we proved that their mission they were claiming that was a pueblo was not on the list of missions to become pueblos. So the Spanish never said that mission was going to be a pueblo.
I'm going to bring a caller in. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask Debbie and Greg today?
Hi, this is Dale. I've done summary judgments, but the public doesn't understand. A summary judgment means that there's no triable issue of fact, and the judge decided, in this case, that the defendants had no cause of action, no ability to defend anything, including the affirmative defenses. And so all those attorney's fees was a big waste of taxpayers' money.
Debbie?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And, you know, bringing it back to everybody, if you're listening to this show and you're thinking, I don't have a farm, or I don't, even if you're being delivered water and you're in a city limit, it matters because we, the overliers, meaning living in the city, living outside the city limits, we all have this wonderful natural resource, extraordinary natural resource. I mentioned the size of the basin. And for those folks that are new to all this, a groundwater basin is defined by just a large underground area that holds fresh water. And we have a giant natural storage area under the ground in Paso Robles. So everybody, it matters to everybody. And I think that what people needed to, and I used to think, man, I represent everybody, you know, and it's not just the small farmers that are really getting, you know, hosed in this deal. It's everybody. And I wanted people always to understand, sure, we were being played. We were in a drought, which naturally lowers the groundwater table, right? Meaning you right. have to put your well deeper or you have to wait for the drought to end. And then we had the poor shallow well people saying, you know, whole neighborhoods were Geneseo, places like that out of Paso, we're running out of water and the big vineyards are sucking it all. Well, it's true. The vineyards were sinking deeper wells and being able to continue to water their vineyards. But a lot of the problems we were experiencing were droughts. A lot of those old subdivisions were done back in the day when no one really inspected the property for is there enough water to support this subdivision. You were just allowed to...
Debbie, you remember from Geneseo to the border was all dry land farming, only a couple of vineyards. Yes.
Because it didn't have, I call it access to water. There's that 30 million acre feet of water right under the ground, but some places you have to go so deep to tap in. I always called the greatest example in this county, California Valley, where a ranch was allowed to be subdivided into 7,000 lots, and it didn't have any access to water. I mean, that was reasonable, you know, for people to sink a well. So they sold all those buildable lots without access to water. But the point is, during that drought, many little, small neighborhoods here and there out my way, Park Hill, is the same thing. It was a subdivided ranch, and many of those properties have a hard time, with their water, especially in a drought. But the point is that we were going through a drought, and then here we had these outside folks trying to take advantage of our water, scaring everybody. Oh, my gosh. You know, we're an overdraft. We were never. Greg can tell you there was the DWR letter that came in where the guy from DWR, when Cindy Steinbeck said, why are you saying all this? Why are you saying we're overdrafted? We're in a drought, but no one's proven overdraft, meaning we're pumping more than the basin will yield.
Right. And
he said, I got all my information from newspaper articles. How scientific was that? Remember, Greg?
Yeah.
When that happened?
Yeah.
I have a question for Greg. Greg, what's going to happen to the water district now as a result of his judgment?
Well, I don't feel that the people that are in the quiet title action, first off, what is their benefit? They've proven that they have nobody has claims against them. They don't need to participate. What everybody needs to understand, these guys that wanted to be groundwater sustainability agencies, called GSAs, their authority is over their GSA area. So if you're in one of the opt-in districts, they only have authority over the people that are in their district. The city of Paso Robles has authority in the city limits. The county flood control water conservation district is who is the GSA for the county. The county is also the water district in the town of Shandon. That's the only place they use water authority, or that they have a water district there in Santa Margarita. So by them joining together thinking that they can control the basin when they don't have the priority right, because appropriators are not overliers, and they have to use their prescriptive amounts of water, and that's it.
Hey, thank you very much for calling in. And Debbie, thank you very much for spending this half hour with us. It was great talking to you.
Thank you, Karen.
And we're going to be back with more with Greg Graywall after a word from our sponsors.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks ending higher as Treasury yields tumbled after the U.S. government increased its buyback on long-term Treasuries. Healthcare stocks advance with Moderna the big winner on Wall Street today. Its stock surging over 170%, and Merck stock rose over 12% following news that their customized melanoma vaccine kept patients cancer-free for longer than standard treatments. Rising oil prices are keeping inflation worries alive, with West Texas Intermediate crude gushing above $85 a barrel. Chips extending losses following Tuesday's declines. The Magnificent Seven big cap tech stocks were mostly higher. The Dow winners, Merck, Amgen, and Salesforce. The Dow decliners, Caterpillar, Goldman Sachs, and JP Morgan Chase. The Dow up 120 points, the Nasdaq higher by 41, S&P 500 up 16. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Most investments today feel like second jobs. Real estate? You're a landlord. Stocks? You're a day trader. Crypto? You're a full-time researcher. You've got a life to live. Your investment should help you live it. That's why more Americans are choosing gold. Noble Gold has helped thousands protect their future with real physical gold. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com to get your free wealth protection kit. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Listen to this real Paso Robles Glass customer where they installed 23 replacement Milgard Tuscany windows and two sliding doors.
Steve Eklund, Craig Smith as an architect and a proud and honored client of Paso Robles Glass. Hey, the boys are doing a great job. They just left. Everything is just fine. Extremely good crew. You got that crew is exceptional. They're all hardworking guys, very careful, very cautious. All is good. I think they have one more day tomorrow, wrap it up, the finished work. I'd like to set up a time to come up and see you next week. I've got a big, big project I'd like you to look at for me. Whatever works on your end, just wanted to let you know, Steve. Take care. Bye.
Get rid of your old broken windows and get new Milgard energy-efficient windows and doors with Milgard's ironclad lifetime warranty.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vili, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News and read our story about the Paso Robles water basin legal issue. As for those that don't know, the Paso Robles water basin, a group of landowners sued 12 years ago. More than $20 million later, and all these court hearings and trials, the judge has now said, this is for quiet title, the overliers have won. The last order isn't out, but the judge has already said all their defenses are wrong. It's not wrong, or not accurate, or what do you call it? Not wrong. Wrong's the wrong word.
They've had an opportunity to provide what they thought was their evidence to prove their affirmative defenses, and they failed at every one of them.
And so the property owners, the Cindy Steinbeck, the Gray Graywall, a number of people, more than 800 people were involved in this lawsuit. They are now, they have won. And this is a very big thing for this community. It's a very big thing for this county. And that's what we're talking today. I have Greg Graywall on the show. We are taking your calls. Call 805-238-5775. And one of the things, back when I used to watch the water numbers, and I do, when it rains, if you look, Cal Coast News will often say we've had this much rain, here's the average rainfall, here's the different areas being measured. But probably about 8 years ago, I was doing this, and I was looking at Santa Margarita, and they were pushing changing the water rules over there. And so the county says, we go back to a map. It's a 40-year-old map, and they did 50 years of how much rainfall, and that's the correct way, and that's how you get average rainfall. What concerned me about this is that there was a time, and I was watching Santa Margarita. I was watching everybody, and it was like, wait a minute. Santa Margarita used to have an average rainfall. I think it was about 18 inches, and then they increased it to 24 inches, and then they made it 31 or 35. And I called and questioned him. I said, what is this about? Well, that's the accurate rainfall. We get it off this old map. And I thought, wait a minute, that's not the accurate rainfall. And because if you're getting it from an old map, how can it be changing? How can you change numbers? How can you manipulate? But I did call the feds, and they said there's rules on this. There is rules on how you do average rainfall. According to the federal government, the National Weather Service, you have to go back every 10 years, every 10 years, you go back 40 years. So, in 2010, you do 40 years before that. And we don't do that here. We go to an old map. But how were they changing the numbers, and why were they manipulating? Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask Greg today?
I'd like to ask him what he thinks is going to happen next, because the Harvard University endowment and the Resnicks are not going away, and with the city of Paso and the county of San Luis, they have unlimited legal resources. So I'm assuming they're just regrouping, and they're going to come after it again.
So Harvard sold their investments to a pension fund out of Montreal, Canada. So they invested in the Shandon area, roughly 10,000 acres. They put in $60 million. They sold it during the COVID time for $98 million. I don't know that they have any other holdings here. The same person that was fronting for them, Matt Turrentine, is fronting for these other people out of Canada. They're not here to grow wine. They were never here to grow wine. Grapes were a cover crop to gain a historic use of water. That was the play. Get into the water banking business.
So the Canadian company is not going to go away either.
Well, no, they got to do something with their investment. But I don't know if they ever thought that the Sustainability Groundwater Management Act would help them or hurt them. There's things you can do and can't do. There's things you have to report on an annual basis. There's reasons that they're not going to be able to go forward with what their initial plans were or weren't. And as you get more information, like I was when I was talking about these expanded well monitoring devices that are showing us the areas that have specific areas of problem, the whole 436,000 acres that's in this portion that's supposed to be being managed doesn't have a problem. There's in fact, I just put together a map that shows where the three or four main housing ag cluster areas are. So that would be Squirrel Hollow, that would be Jardine, that would be El Pomar and Estrella. And then I'm overlying that with what irrigated ag is around there, and then also adding in the almost somewhere between 350 to 400 wells that have been replaced since 2014. So I can specifically show you where irrigated ag came in and overpumped, it affected the shallow wells. Now, that didn't basically affect the 31 to 36 million acre feet of water that's in this basin, but it did affect the people that were put in these ag clusters and guaranteed that the ag could survive around these housing developments. And it couldn't once they went in with deeper wells, and there's water there, but these guys weren't deep enough. So that is a problem. And it will be a problem until they address it. And we had that built into the groundwater management plan that there was supposed to be targeted areas of pumping reductions where you couldn't solve the problem any other way. But when you put the coyotes in the chicken coop and put them in charge of the organization that's supposed to be implementing the plan and they don't follow the plan because it affects them. They don't care what affects you. But, you know, they talk about, like, they want to subsidize people to fallow their land. Well, why? You can fallow it on your own without being subsidized, and then that subsidy lasts until 2039, because in 2040, the basin is supposed to be at its perfect level. What happens when the basin is at its perfect level? You can't add anything or do anything. All you can do is exchange stuff, unless you knock the basin out of being perfect again. So I don't understand when they say, oh, we need more housing. We need affordable this. We need affordable that. You don't have the resources. There's an occupancy load on everything. And maybe the occupancy load in certain areas means they're maxed out and they can't add anything. And these agencies are going to have to understand that they can't conduct business as usual. I am not an overlier of the basin. I am in the watershed. My water that comes out of my ranch actually provides water into the Creston subarea. And so they need to look at these areas on what is being provided from the watershed into these areas. Why are some areas better than others? Because we have a better watershed and our use is not the same as in the uses that have a worse watershed.
Isn't the argument that residential is a closed loop? You take a shower, you flush the toilet, it goes from the well into the leach field and then back into the well.
Well, it's going to, yeah, you're replacing what you're using. And it's a good system. You can't, how do you equate that to what the city does? The city takes all the water they use, whether it's Nasi, whether it's Atascadero Sub-Basin, whether it's Salinas River, whether it's the Paso Basin. They use it in all their houses, businesses, and whatever. It's then gone through their sewer system to their treatment plant. It's partially treated. It is dumped in the river. And it's exported. So they don't recharge anything. So which system is better? The system of the rural landowner or the system that doesn't recharge anything of the city? And who's responsible?
Well, don't the ag clusters use the septic model?
Correct. But they don't have the deeper wells. If I could show you a map of the wells in the Jardine area, and there's 500 properties, and those wells used to average 250 feet. So the wells around them, the sweet spot in that area of the basin is at 800 feet.
Thank you very much for calling in. I have missed, we have three different people have sent in questions for you on the text messages. Sorry, I did not notice. Ask Greg if Windfall Farms just said, is that going to affect this? Just sold. Is that going to affect this?
Yeah, I don't know who they sold that place to. I think it was for $16 million. They had a starting price of $15. They were asking $33. And they have about 400 acres of planted vines. I think the property is about 700 acres. So you have the area that was the racetrack and the other barns and pastures and stuff in the front. But, you know, with any crop, you got to be able to sell the crop. What good is irrigating a crop you can't sell? And why are you? How is that beneficial if you can't sell what you're growing? They have a right to grow stuff, but are you doing it to actually conduct business, or are you doing it just to gain a historic use? Because I have Limoneira's cover sheet from when they bought the property. It says, we use farming as a cover crop to gain a historic use for water so that we can sell it at a higher price somewhere else. That was their attitude on their cover page that they had. And they came and did a presentation in Creston once back in 2015 with their president and their attorney, Scott Slater, trying to convince the people in Creston that we should do a friendly adjudication. We could make more money selling water than we could farming. But yeah, farming is great. People using their land is great. That's beneficial. It's not only beneficial for the community, it's beneficial for the ground. You're not helping the ground by just leaving it with weeds and ground squirrels and other stuff like that. Grazing, refertilization, doing certain things is beneficial for the ground, and that ground also helps the recharge from when we get the rains.
Okay, here's the next one. When the agencies lost their case, are they going to be responsible for the POWR attorney fees?
Don't know. That's
a property owner's attorney's fees.
Yeah. So in the court order, it does say that they're leaving the determination to the court to decide what costs would be recoverable. And that would be determined at a later time.
So there is the possibility. I know a lot. So there's some cases that the judges have leeway. But for example, I just won a case and the judges are required to give you court costs. And so, like, for example, in a slap motion for a frivolous lawsuit, they are required to give you court costs. That's, I mean, they can say you're asking for too much, but they have to give you your attorney fees and court costs.
And I know there was some stuff that dealt with, like San Miguel turned in 15,000 pages of documents that we had to go through to get ready for court. And then they want to claim that they shouldn't be, have a problem because they withdrew. No, you caused us to have to do a lot of work, spend a lot of money. You had a specialist, you paid an expert witness, you paid $50,000 to. And here's what it's written in this order. Plaintiffs are the prevailing parties in the phase six. The court reserves for later determination all issues related to recovery of costs and, if applicable, attorney's fees.
And I will tell you, sometimes it surprises me. I was watching an appeal case. John Belcher's wife, Jody Bernat, had sued a man named Steve Cable who called and gave me information and lost his case, so they appealed it. And, you know, filed a bunch of stuff, and they had to file and respond, and he had to have attorneys working on it. And then they dropped it. They dropped it, and the court immediately said, we have to do restitution now. You owe restitution for the cost of the appeal to the other side. We're going to take a break, a word from our sponsors, and be back with more with Greg Graywall talking about the win for the people that sued over their water rights above the basin.
Attend the 30th ever Creston Classic Rodeo, September 10th, 11th, and 12th. All of your rodeo favorites like barrel racing, roping, penny will be at the Creston Classic Rodeo, and don't miss the famous mutton busting. Watching the little cowboys and cowgirls trying to stay on those sheep is always exciting. For more information, check out the Creston Classic Rodeo on Facebook, Instagram, and at crestonclassicrodeo.org.
Ryan, what do painters do when it gets cold outside?
I don't know. What?
Well, they put on another coat, of course.
Seth, that joke needs some touch-up.
Hi, I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers.
We paint interiors year-round.
But fall and winter? That's when it's perfect time.
Yeah, perfect time for a fresh look.
We do full interior painting, residential and commercial. We work with your schedule.
Plus cabinet painting that makes old kitchens look brand new.
Clean lines, no mess, no stress.
From one room in your home to a whole office building, tasting room, medical suites, we've got you covered.
This season, call the Peek Brothers. I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers.
And everybody loves a great experience.
That's Peek Painting. P-E-E-K painting.com.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We move from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
Hello, it's me, Jared, with Hutch Heating and Air. When was the last time you changed your filter or had your air conditioner looked at by a pro? Yes, a pro. Did you know your air conditioner can lose small amounts of refrigerant over time, wasting your hard-earned money to cool down your home without you noticing anything wrong? So save a buck and remember us. Heater not helping much? Call Hutch at 466-8199 or look us up on the web at hutchheatingandair.com.
Welcome to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vealey, your host on Wednesday and Thursday. I have Greg Graywall on the show, and we're talking about the 12-year-old case with Quiet Title attempting to have rights to their water over the Paso Robles Basin. They're still waiting for the final sign-off by the judge, but the judge has said that she's going with the defendants. We have a caller. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask Greg today?
Well, thanks for taking the call. This is one of the most interesting subjects that I listen to with you guys, and I'm a new property owner that moved in from another area. I believe I'm over the Atascadero Water Basin and was interested in how to go about getting quiet title in case this gets outside of the Paso Robles Basin. So, I was wondering if there's any kind of information that you might be able to share on that. And
yeah, so in part of our lawsuit, or in, not in part of it, the Atascadero Subbasin in our lawsuit is part of the lawsuit because they are part of the Bulletin 118 Basin boundary. So the little portion that's in Monterey County and the portion of and all of the Atascadero Subbasin and the bigger part of the Paso Basin are all considered one by the Department of Water Resources. So they're subject to what happened in the Quiet Title action. In the case of anybody else out there that and I don't live over the basin, I live in the watershed, but I still wanted to protect my property. I think everybody should get together on your own or get together with whoever, and if you need to form a group, and you should file for quiet title. I think we laid the yellow brick road, and all the defenses out there that anybody has, I don't know what else they could come back with, because we just spent 13 years in court to prove what we needed to prove, and so the facts are all there. They have to have 5 years of continuous overuse to claim prescription. That was the method that they wanted to come up with. We paid the county as taxpayers to manage the basin. They went to court to claim that they secretly weren't managing the basin and didn't tell us that they were doing things wrong and that they should get prescription because they did things wrong. I mean, that's pretty much, in a nutshell, what
the problem
is
and the solution.
Yeah, yeah. We're paying them to be in charge, but they didn't do their job.
No, and I the previous caller was talking about that they're probably going to circle back again. I can see it, and even if I don't have it over here, it just seems like just moving in, it's too late to try to attach to that Steinbeck lawsuit.
Yeah, we were.
And I'd have to do it all. I'd have to just kind of go it alone, or do you have to have a group to go and try to do that?
No, you can go it alone. You can. I don't know the actual parameters that you would have to do if you can go file on your own, or if you need to file under an attorney. But I would ask any of the neighbors or stuff, or anybody else that you know that's in the area. They don't have to be directly in the same area, and say, hey, I'm going to go quiet title my property. Do you want to quiet title your property?
And you have a well, correct?
I do have a well. It's a 10-acre property. It's about a half mile northwest of the 101 and 46 west.
Perfect.
So there's vineyards on a couple of sides of us. I know a couple of the neighbors. We've talked to a vineyard owner over there. So I don't know if they were already part of the lawsuit and went through the quiet title, but I'd hate to lose my water rights. It was one of the things we were nervous about with all the signs when we moved up here in September. You know, it's like they're trying to go after your water rights. And it's one of the things I like about the property. And right now it's just domestic, but we've thought about maybe a vineyard when people start drinking wine again, or some sort of agriculture and all the rest of it. And I won't have the historic use for that, which it seems you need to look into and provide.
You don't lose
everything else.
You don't lose your use because you didn't use it at any given time. That's another part of this whole deal. If your property used to be part of a bigger property.
It did.
And when you go back in history, this is the other thing we proved in the fifth trial, that when properties were subdivided, they didn't have to prove what happened years back, because if they were part of a bigger place and that place used water, you're basically grandfathered under them as having a use. But a private landowner has the priority right. So protecting your rights by quiet title is the only thing that a court allows us to do in this state. And I think everybody should look into it or do it, because there isn't that much left for this basin to just be adjudicated. And you are part of the Bulletin 118 Basin as far as the Department of Water Resources is concerned with the map. It's just they separated Atascadero as far as who gets to be the manager of that sub-basin over there.
Okay. Yeah, I think it is something that I will probably do. Just listening to some of the, I think you've had about two or three guests that have been on this program that are super interesting and informative. And I don't really want to lose them down the road, so I probably will look into that and maybe just talk to a couple neighbors and see what they want to do. Do you have any recommendations on kind of where to start with that process, or law firms or groups that that are open to that kind of thing?
Yeah, I would first just look up through any law firm that says handles water stuff but or land use, and just say, hey, what does a guy have to do to file a quiet title? Let's just say you're by yourself and you don't have anybody else. Is that something that I fill out a document and I go down and file it at the courthouse, or what do I have to do? And then that'll be the beginning of the journey. I'm very doubtful that you are going to have to spend 13 years like I did to get to the end of the rainbow.
And I suggest, I think there's quite a few people listening right now who care about quiet title who weren't with the last lawsuit. You could even give your phone number and say, contact me if you want to get involved.
Yeah, I don't know if you have a neighborhood kind of a connection as far as that Facebook stuff or some of the neighborhood little, you know, informational things. But
yeah, we get into the next door. I don't do Facebook, but yeah. my girlfriend does.
Yeah.
So that might be something where you just post on there, you know, hey, we're thinking about doing it. I might look around and see if there's already other groups. It doesn't necessarily need to be an adjacent property, correct?
No, it doesn't. And it can be de minimis properties. They don't have to be big, large bumpers. It can be anybody. You know, like I said, I was in the watershed. I wasn't in the affected area that they did, but I wanted to protect my place, and I was willing to take the time to do it. And I think it's a worthwhile thing because, yeah, my kids are going to get my place, and I wanted to make sure that I wasn't the next domino to fall.
Yeah, I think our property is butted right up against the Paso city limits too. So we're just into the unincorporated. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to do any kind of expansion or I can't think of what it is.
Yeah, they want you to become part of the city.
yeah, and I could just see that coming, and this sounds like a good thing. Is there anything else that quiet title protects you from that?
Well, it's any kind
of benefit.
It's any claims against your land. So any kind of anything
easements.
Yeah. Any kind of claims that somebody claims that they have a right to do something on your property or with your property that you don't have, it squashes all of those.
Okay. Well, cool. That kind of answers my question. I'll probably look at a lawyer or maybe just go file it. It just depends, I guess, if somebody contests what I'm asking for.
Right.
That'll decide the cost on, you know, whether it's minimal or expensive.
They even put a stop to us adding people at a certain date. And because they were worried we were going to get more people.
And I want to thank you very much for calling in. I want to go over, we have two more questions. One of them I think is a repeat. Is there any chance that the landowners that were in the quiet title will get any of their money back? You answered that there is a chance.
Yeah.
And then we have another question. Please confirm with Greg, the California Constitution allows a beneficial use. The problem is the government officials are not following the Constitution.
Correct. So the Department of Water Resources is in charge of running the Sustainability Groundwater Management Act. The part of the arm that has the more strength in it is the State Water Control Board. And all they need to do is follow the law too. The Groundwater Act states that they need to, that it does not change California water law. So if it doesn't change California water law and we're on the right side of the water law, then we should be protected. And that's why I said that the agencies that should be in charge of basin management should be the people with the priority right and not the appropriators that are trying to, let's say, flip the rights and make themselves more important. That was the premise of protecting our rights, that we could show that we were in line with the state constitution and they were not. And everybody needs to understand, when I'm reading some of this stuff, I'm giving you direct quotes and information out of the papers that came from the court. All of these papers are public documents that anybody can download.
And Greg, I want to thank you very much. First of all, I want to thank you for what you've done for the community. And I want to thank you very much for coming on the show and really explaining to people what's going on. And thank you. Just thank you for what you do.
Not a problem. We won't stop.
And thank you for listening today. I'll be back tomorrow. Dan Dow's going to be on, and several other people. We're going to be talking about a repeat offender.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL was brought to you by Lint Patrol, specializing in dryer vent cleaning. Don't overwork your dryer or let your vent start a fire. Contact Dylan at lintpatrolca.com or call 805-975-5176.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 2 o'clock.